Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 11:29 Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 9th, and of course it's Friday. It's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, let's start off the review by talking about currencies. Well, this week was pretty notable for the euro, and by extension for the US dollar. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I guess it must be nearly a month ago, Mario Draghi was talking about the 140 area for the euro as being a bit of a red line in for the ECB. They thought that that was where the currency would really start to act as a headwind for the region's exporters. And, well, the eurozone's recovery has been really based upon the outperformance of the export sector rather than domestic demand. The domestic demand environment has been pretty subdued and in many respects contracting because of the deflationary policies that the ECB have imposed. Well, this week you have the ECB talking about the need for additional stimulus. Well, they have the capacity to cut interest rates by an additional 0.25%. Well, that'll take them to an additional new low. What they could also do, something that has been proposed over the last couple of years but hasn't actually been implemented, is to make the deposit ratio, the deposit rate at the ECB for banks negative. Well, that would then force them to take some of the money they have in deposit at the central bank and start lending it out to the corporate and the retail sector. Well, they're probably unlikely to do that. If the ECB goes ahead and makes that sort of a move, well, then that's not going to be a confidence-inducing measure for the stock market, because it would represent, one, would be a departure from the norm. It would represent an extraordinary monetary tool. It wouldn't be particularly good news for the banks. The banks are still struggling to repair their balance sheets, and they're not really in the kind of shape that would allow them to make a lot of loans. So if the ECB were to move the deposit rate into negative territory, there might be some short-term gains for those that are seeking to get some money from the banks, but it's probably not going to be particularly good for the banking sector. Which, considering that the ECB has made limitless capital available to the banking sector in order to try and repair their balance sheets, they're unlikely to do anything to endanger that policy. So the most likely scenario is that the ECB may re-engage in bond buying, and that we might see an additional interest rate cut. Well, when you look at the size of the ECB's balance sheet, well, it expanded considerably in 2011, and then over the last 18 months it has unwound the entire expansion. So the ECB has sanitized all of its bond buying while at the same time making abundant liquidity available to the banking sector. Well, what that really means is that they've been taking money out of the system in one place while adding it in others, but that the net effect has been that they've been reducing the amount of money in the system. Well, that's generally been a positive for the euro, and it helps to explain why the euro has been so firm against a background where there's been a lot of uncertainty, particularly over the last 18 months. Well, what's interesting this week is that not only has the euro posted a downside key day reversal yesterday, followed through today, that's a downside weekly key reversal from the region of about 140, and it's currently at 137.50, but also that the ECB's balance sheet turned upwards for the first time in about 18 months. It would suggest that the ECB's balance sheet is starting to expand once more. Well, that's generally positive from the perspective of asset prices. They're deliberately targeting inflation. They're much more, well, the ECB has got one mandate. It isn't like the Federal Reserve. Their only mandate is to contain inflation. And they have an inflation target of about 2%. Well, inflation is currently a long way from 2% in the eurozone, and that really does mean that they have to adopt an inflationary bias to try and get it up again. Well, that's not going to be positive for the euro. We're probably going to see it come back and test the region of the 200-day moving average, and whether it finds support there then is going to be open to question. Well, the Eurozone economy is recovering, and additional stimulus will certainly help in that regard. But what we have seen this week is that short-term overbought conditions have been unwound, because we just don't know which way the ECB is going to go with this. I think people are a little bit worried about the negative deposit rate at the ECB. Well, we've got little short-term overbought conditions in some of these European markets, and I guess there is a bit of a headwind from the US. Well, I guess the US dollar, by extension, has been pretty weak. And the dollar index was up pretty sharply yesterday and followed through to the upside today, not least because it's got such a big weighting by the euro. But by and large, the dollar has been a pretty weak currency for the last few months, and it's pretty oversold in the short term. So there is potential for an unwinding of that short-term oversold condition and some additional strength in here. Well, when you look at the US stock market, what we've seen is a rotation out of risk and growth and into quality. When one looks at the IPO index, then, well, that index is made up of companies that have IPO'd in the last year, and it's pulled back remarkably sharply. What we're really starting to see now is people looking at the business models of some of these IPOs, and their conclusions haven't been particularly encouraging. Well, that was a little bit of a bubbly environment. We've seen that some of those IPOs had gone up very, very sharply, and they have come back equally sharply. And to a large extent, there are short-term oversold conditions evident, but there's no great deal of evidence yet that the lows are in. But, well, I guess they're more interesting now than they were 4 or 5 weeks ago. Well, when people are taking money out of the IPOs and the high growth markets, well, then they're looking for yield. They're looking for strong balance sheets and solid business models. Well, what we've seen is that, well, the European energy sector, where you have yields in the region of 4 to 5% for a number of them, and reasonably low PEs, and an oil price which has been reasonably static, well, they've been breaking out of bases. Royal Dutch Shell has rallied rather well in the last month, and both BP and Eni are right at the upper side of multi-year bases. Well, they have impressive yields, and well, when one looks at, say, for example, the US-listed BlackRock Energy and Resources Trust, well, it's trading at a discount to NAV of 10% and yields 6%. So there's definitely value in some of these sectors. Well, those are the types of sectors that people are starting to look to, that people are looking for a little bit of a safe haven. And they're finding it in, certainly in the corporate sector. Well, when you look at a number of the autonomies, well, it's particularly the consumer sector had spent much of last year ranging, and now we're seeing it turn back to a position of outperformance. When people are starting to look for quality, they look for a record of increasing dividends over the medium to long term. Well, Nestlé, having spent much of the last year ranging, is right back to test its peak. Well, Kimberly-Clark had broken out in the last couple of weeks, so there's certainly a rotation going on. Well, when people are looking for a little bit of a safe haven, well, they look for quality in the equity markets, but they're also looking at the bond markets. Well, people are starting to look at the potential for the curve to flatten, and that would appear to be underway, where you have the 30-year has been on a tear. It broke up out of broke above 135. It's down a little bit today, but it's still close to 136. Well, those yields have contracted. They're back now to the first area of potential support for the yield, or resistance for pricing, but there hasn't been any great sign yet that the contraction in yields at the long end of the curve is over. Whereas at the other end of the curve, well, you've got Janet Yellen talking about the need for a high accommodation without actually defining exactly what high accommodation is. Well, the Fed's balance sheet continues to expand, but they continue to taper. So They are taking with one hand and giving with the other. Well, of course, the federal deficit has been decreasing. The Treasury has therefore been issuing less bonds, and as a result, there are fewer bonds for the Fed to buy. Well, that means that they can taper their buying program without actually contracting the size of their balance sheet, just because, and it hasn't really having any meaningful effect in terms of contraction, because there's just fewer bonds to buy. Well, that's a little bit different in the bond, in the mortgage bond markets. Well, half of quantitative easing has been about buying up mortgage bonds. The slowing pace of increases in the housing market represents a potential headwind for how the Fed is going to taper and monetary policy more generally. So when we think about the stock market, well, people are looking for a little bit of a safe haven, and things went up awfully quickly last year. So this year has been really dominated by consolidation, and well, that remains very much the case. We're in this range-bound environment, and valuations are, well, they're not particularly expensive, but they're certainly not cheap. And, well, people need to have an additional reason to buy. And at present, the way earnings are coming through, it's hard to justify taking on very large long positions right now. Well, at the short end of the curve, well, yields aren't going to go any lower. If you look at the two-year yield, it looks like a first step above the base. Well, it would suggest that the low end of the curve is probably going to rise, and certainly at the very long end of the curve, we've had some contraction, so people are starting to bet on a flattening yield curve. Well, there is an ETF that looks at that, and it appears to be in the process of breaking out. So people are betting that the yield curve is going to flatten here, that monetary policy isn't going to be as accommodative as it has been. But we're a long way from an inverted yield curve. Well, I guess the reason I bring up the inverted yield curve is because when it does move into negative territory, and we're at 225 basis points, so we're a long way away from that yet. But when it does go into negative territory, it's a lead indicator for US recessions with about a 1 year lag. So we're a long way from the next recession if that's going to be our indicator. But we're 5 years into a bull market, and there are increasing signs that this cyclical bull is mature. Well, when we look at the cyclicality, then we can look at it over the last 5 years, but probably more important is to look at it over the last 20 years. Well, the S&P 500 hit a peak in 1999 and broke out in the last 12 months. So it's broken out of a 13-year range. Well, on previous occasions when we see that kind of action, well, it's generally been the beginning of a new bull market. So when we talk about a new bull market, well, how do you measure the beginning of a new bull market? Do you look at it as the breakout or the completion of the first step above the base? Well, we've had a breakout, and the upper side of the range is in the region of about 1550 to 1600 on the S&P, and the S&P index is currently trading at 1869 on the June future. So, well, there's plenty of room for consolidation. I think people are sitting with a lot of cash on the sidelines. They're worried about the potential for that kind of a drawdown. But if we were to see that kind of drawdown, well, then it would represent a buying opportunity. It would also see that some of the valuations that have been pushed up would correct somewhat, and it would be a more attractive buying opportunity from the perspective of a value investor. Well, how we're going to get through the period of extraordinary monetary policy remains very much open to question. We just don't know what the answer is to that question. But it's hard to imagine that we're going to see yields go very much lower than they have been over the last couple of years. So the question then is a question of when rather than if we eventually start to see interest rates beginning to move back upwards, and certainly that's what we're seeing in the bond markets, that people are positioning themselves for that outcome, and that they view the longer end of the curve as a potential safe haven. Well, if we go back to currencies and we look at the US dollar, well then the dollar has been pretty weak and looks like it's set for a bounce. The euro was comparatively strong and has been deteriorating. Well, the pound, which you could regard as a financially based currency because of the dominance of the city, has been a relative strength leader. It broke out to new highs against the euro in here today. It was down a bit against the US dollar, having tested the $1.70 area for the first time in a number of years in here this week. So there's some potential for the pound to consolidate further, but well, the British economy is improving, and the health of the city has improved. So the argument for a substantially weaker currency is not particularly compelling. But again, the Bank of England isn't going to be particularly happy with one of the stronger currencies in the world when they really are still combating the effects of the credit crisis on consumers. So we're probably in for a bit of additional volatility. Well, with that's pretty much Europe, but well, this month we've seen that the renminbi has been particularly weak, and it suggests that the Chinese are using the currency as a policy tool. Well, they've been doing that for quite some time in order to combat inflation. Well, one of the more important statistics this week was that Chinese inflation was coming in below expectations. Well, that means they don't particularly need a strong currency to combat inflation anymore, and rather the opposite, in fact. They need a weaker currency to stimulate the manufacturing sector, which has, particularly in low-end and in textiles, has become uncompetitive relative to China's neighbors. Well, if they're going to embark on reform of the state-owned enterprises sector, which is infrastructure and property development in the banking sector, well, they're going to need the manufacturing sector firing on all cylinders to take up some of the slack. So the renminbi was a little bit stronger at the beginning of this week. It has stabilized. I don't think we're going to see the lows down there at 6 to the dollar, the highs up there at 6 to the dollar, tested anytime soon. The appreciation of the renminbi, which has been ongoing now for much of the last decade, is probably over. And they probably view their currency as overvalued. Well, the other currency that people have been looking for additional weakness from is the yen. Well, the yen continues to hold around this 100 yen to the dollar area. It hasn't strengthened markedly, but it hasn't been weakening much either. Well, the Japanese have taken some big bets. They've embarked upon the road of quantitative easing. But in order to ensure that the JGB market doesn't disintegrate, they felt obligated to raise the VAT rate. Well, that's weighed on the stock market, and the Nikkei has been pretty weak over the last 3 weeks, and is right down now to test the first area of potential support. Well, you have Abe in here this week talking about the three prongs of his attack on deflation, and well, they really are going to have to continue on the road of regulatory reform and attempting to wean themselves off of a reliance on foreign energy. Well, if they can do that, well, then the chances are that the stock market is going to improve. But the case isn't quite made just yet, and the stock market is at that area where we're going to need some evidence of demand coming in. And, the chances are that that would probably happen, but an upper dynamic would certainly help to bolster that case. Well, a lot of people have been looking at emerging markets with a little bit of trepidation over the last 6 months because we had that big pullback in their currencies. Well, most of those currencies have steadied. The pullback in the currency prompted a number of the central banks to raise interest rates. And that was particularly the case in some of the resources markets, not least in Brazil. Well, it looks like the Brazilian central bank is defending the 2.4 real to the dollar area. Well, as a result of the bounce in the currency, you've had a bounce in the stock market as well. Over the last, more than a decade, the performance of the real and the stock market have been pretty much lockstepped. So the strengthening of the currency, well, that's also been bolstered by the relative strength of the industrial metal complex. Well, iron ore hasn't been particularly strong, but nickel has, and copper is still pretty much range-bound. In fact, the break below $3 in copper failed, so it's back up to about $3.850 at the close in here today. Well, that's also positive for Brazil, and of course you have some pretty big sporting events going on there this year, so that should help with inflows of foreign currency. Well, also the geopolitical situation in Eastern Europe is still fraught with uncertainty. One just doesn't know whether we can take the Russians at their word that they are withdrawing their troops from Eastern Ukraine, or the border of Eastern Ukraine. Well, that being said, you don't have the same geopolitical worries about supply in much of Latin America that you currently have in Eastern Europe, and again, that should be positive for countries like Brazil and potentially Chile. Well, you've had really a trend of improving governance in Mexico for the last 18 months, and well, that has fed through into less volatility in the currency, and the stock market is rallying from the lower side of its range. It's on a higher valuation than Brazil, and Brazil has been more beaten down, so the chances are that Brazil can play catch-up and probably outperform over the next while. Well, if you look at the Asian region, then the majority of currencies have also begun to have at least steadied. The pullback in their currencies have also prompted their central banks to defend their currencies. Well, the most the strongest currency there has been the Korean won, and well, that was a tiny bit weaker in here today, the first sign of weakness in at least the last 3 weeks. It's conspicuously strong. The chances of it continuing to outperform in this manner, I think, are pretty low, and the stock market has been pulling back and also found support at a progressively higher level. It looks like it potentially is putting in a higher reaction low in here. A weakness, or some additional weakness in the won, would certainly help in that regard. Well, these are mostly short-term considerations. When we look at the medium to long-term, well, Asia represents where we've had the biggest move in terms of the number of people in the middle class over the last 20 and 30 years. Well, that's still a trend that's going to continue. The majority of the growth in the global population is going to come from Africa, and that's where you have burgeoning middle classes coming off a very low base. Well, if you think about the next 20 to 30 years, it will be in Africa that you have perhaps the biggest percentage growth in the middle classes, and not least because it's coming off such a low base. Well, that means that it's going to become an increasingly important region, that the Indian Ocean Basin is going to be a significant economic center. And, well, that's likely to continue for at least the next 20 to 30 years. It means that the middle class all the way around the Indian Ocean is probably going to do substantially better than it has done. Well, that represents a growth opportunity for just about all of the big consumer companies. And, well, they're increasingly getting involved in sub-Saharan Africa. Well, we're going to have an additional 2 billion people entering the middle class, and that means that demand for just about everything is still on a growth trajectory. Well, we've had incredible technological innovation, which has helped to moderate the pace of increases in the energy complex, not least because of cheap natural gas. Well, that represents a bridge. Well, at the other side of that bridge is the fact that technological innovation is being applied to solar, and that solar is increasingly being looked at as a technology rather than as an energy source that can be got out of the ground. So it's well, Moore's law applies, and it means that the efficiency of solar cells is improving while the cost is decreasing. Well, that represents the potential for an energy revolution, which could really give us what we need, which is cheap energy. And, well, cheap energy represents a massive productivity growth engine and is the kind of thing that a secular bull market can be predicated on. Well, technological innovation isn't just happening in energy, but also in a number of other sectors, and not least healthcare. Well, obviously, some of the froth has been blown off the biotech sector, and people are starting to look back at more established pharma companies. But when one takes a big step back and looks at the big picture, well, then we see that innovation in healthcare has the capacity to really enhance productivity growth. Well, that's really important because the global birth rate has already peaked. It means that the global population is going to continue to grow because we live longer, we lead more productive lives. Well, reform and innovation in healthcare is going to be a massive enabler there and represents massive productivity growth potential as well. So we have more people living longer, living more productive lives with cheaper energy. Well, that represents the argument for why we could have a secular bull market beginning. Well, then it really does depend on how long the first step above the base takes and what is going to happen in terms of the risks that are there in the fixed income market. Because when we do think about risks, it is in fixed income that you have the real risk. Well, triple B yields are back to where they were in 2007. So there's an awful lot of good news being priced in there. And, well, how tight are yields likely to get? We're about 120 basis points at present. Well, we've never got to 100 basis points on triple B yields. So, they're expensive, I think is probably the easiest way to think about that. Well, when you start to think about yields on sovereigns, well, Rwanda trades at about 150 basis points over treasuries. Well, that's for a B minus, that's very, very tight. Well, that also means that lending standards have declined. Well, Covlite loans hit a new all-time high last year. Well, they're probably going to hit another high this year. So it means that the competition for yield that was such a factor back in 2006, 2007 is an equally important factor right now. Well, corporations have been making abundant use of the best and the cheapest source of liquidity that they've ever had, and they've been issuing a great deal of debt, they've been retiring old expensive debt, and they've been buying back their shares and increasing their dividends. Well, anything that happens to increase their cost of funding is probably going to affect their buyback programs and their dividend increases. And the fact that corporations have been probably the marginal buyer, buying back their own shares at prodigious rates, has been a fundamental enabler for the cyclical bull market, but could also be a potential headwind. Well, if we think about commodities for a moment, well, the relative strength of the dollar probably over the next few weeks could act as a little bit of a headwind for gold, but generally speaking, gold has been pretty much steady in the region of $1,300, and it's finishing out the week around 1286. It will need to find support in this area if the more bullish hopes are to be realized. Well, palladium has been pretty volatile. It's back below $800 at the end of the week, unwinding the short-term overbought condition, but you do have the better fundamentals in terms of supply and demand that have supported the rally to date. Well, the industrial metal complex is interesting because the majority of miners have slashed their expansion budgets and a number of projects have been cancelled. Well, it's created a tight environment. Predominantly what we see are a large number of base formations. Well, nickel has broken out. There are a number of factors supporting that, but among them are the fact that Indonesia has curtailed the exports of raw ore, and people are worried about what's going to happen with Russia. So prices were up an additional $755 yesterday. We're coming pretty close to $20,000 a ton.
Well, it suggests that what we're seeing now in the industrial metals is that the market has tightened up. It's a very similar situation to what we saw with natural gas last year, that prices had deteriorated to such an extent that marginal suppliers could no longer function, and the market tightened up. Well, we're seeing the same kind of tightening up in a number of the industrial metals. And, well, weather has had a pretty dire effect on a number of commodities. Well, we've seen pretty impressive rallies by coffee and sugar and cocoa. Well, they're probably due for some consolidation, but a number of the grains have got pretty supportive patterns and have been pulling back off late. So the chances are that we might start to see them finding support in the not too distant future. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.